Please be advised that the views and opinions expressed by Richard Martin of LATAM Investments, LLC, are entirely his own and do not necessarily represent those of the company, its affiliates, or its officers. Investments made on the basis of Mr. Martin's comments are unsolicited by the company and are at the sole risk and prejudice of the listener or investor.
Good afternoon, everybody. Sorry about the delay, but I understand that Gary is on the road. I have no idea what time frame or time zone he's in, but he apparently is in the US, so he's forgiven. Anyway, here we are, Monday, February the 23rd, and I'd like to start with a few heads up for you, the listeners. So if you would like to get pen and paper, you might wish to write some of this stuff down. In the meantime, I will, before actually giving you the information to allow yourself the time to do this, I will give you very quickly my regular information. I am Richard Martin, and this is Richard Martin's wake-up call coming to you from Miami. And the call-in number, which I urge you all to use, please, and hopefully you will, is 888-873-4643. That's our call-in number in the next 45 minutes for any of you who wish to ask a question or to air a rant. Once more, 888-873-4643. You can also write me an email express yourself for the benefit of the listeners in that way by writing to rmartin@latamenv.com. LATAM is LATAM, which is the company where I work, LATAM Investments, and INV is short for investment. So once again, the email address, rmartin@lataminv.com. And if you would like to write to me with your, call me with your personal questions and doubts, and problems, you may do that, too, by calling me on my direct line at 305-579-2012. Once more, 305-579-2012. All right, so hopefully you are now all equipped with pen and paper, ready to write. I have a website which I thought might be interesting for some of you who may be contemplating moving out of the country to consult, and that website is very simply escapeartist.com. That's escapeartist, all one word, .com, and from there you will see how to sign up for a regular magazine pertaining to various different aspects of emigrating that you might wish to hear about. Once more, the website is escapeartist.com. Okay? Another show which I think you might want to listen to, ladies and gentlemen, it is a show from Frontline, which came out over the weekend, I believe that Frontline is one of the best documentary film sites that I think it comes out on PBS, but at this point you will need to go to the website, which is easiest to do by just Googling Frontline, and then when it comes up, it says something like watch the shows, click on that and choose the latest show called Inside the Meltdown. Okay, so that's Google Frontline and find the program entitled Inside the Meltdown. Now, hopefully, some of you, regrettably not us as yet, probably too late to do it in front of our move to Singapore, but you may have devised a method of hooking up your computer to the television, probably not a bad idea to do this, because more and more you're going to be needing to watch the various YouTube and other forms of entertainment on television. So you'll probably want to learn to do this. But anyway, it's on the computer right now, the full hour program of Frontline called Inside the Meltdown, and I think you should find it very informative. Next, what do I have? Oh, yes, a book that came out recently, and it's called Plunder and Blunder. It's about the rise and fall of the bubble economy. My attention was drawn to it by my wife, who does feed me with these things with increasing interest. And the author of this book is Dean Baker, and we saw a program which you might, some of you have caught on C-SPAN in their weekend book review section, where Baker discusses the growth and the predictable collapse of the housing and stock market bubbles, and is extremely critical of Greenspan, which made me warm to him greatly. I think you will enjoy it. It's full of a lot of interesting information, which is possibly not accessible elsewhere as of yet. Again, the book is called Plunder and Blunder, The Rise and Fall of the Bubble Economy. And it's by Dean Baker. All right. Next, lots of housekeeping here. We have, or rather, I have an apology to make to George. I promised George from Long Island on the last show that I would do a piece on the CDS story as it pertains to its effect on the banks right now. I just haven't had time to get to this yet, George. I do apologize, and I will do so just as soon as I possibly can. So hopefully that might be Thursday, but these days, with everything that's going on, no promises. All right. Now I come to something which I think is rather sad, and it is an email that I received over the weekend from my long-lost cousin. And this particular cousin I have not seen for 35 years, and I saw him for the first time in October of last year, and he was very critical of my suggestions to him to readjust his investments in front of the coming collapse. He took it very badly and was very resentful, something that I was not expecting and indeed have not encountered on the show. Out of the blue, I got an email from him, and I felt that it was necessary to share this with you, ladies and gentlemen, because it brings up a very important salutary lesson for us all in terms of those who do have influence on the thinking public, of which I must now include myself, I suppose. So I'm going to read this email, and I want you to call in, if possible. I mean, if that's not too much to ask, have you call in, and I'll give you the number again, 888-873-4643. That's the call-in number. And give me your views on this, because it's important for me to get feedback on this kind of thing. And he has his point of view, and I want to know what you think. So I'm just going to read the emails, fairly short, and so here it goes. Dear Richard, I am surprised that you peddle this nonsense. Is it a joke? One in bad taste, then. Why bother? We have all been hit by the slowdown, but do you actually want to bring disaster to the world's economy? Because it certainly seems that way. It seems to be a perverse mindset. Why do you want to bring misery to millions? I am very sorry to say that I cannot believe some of the conclusions that you talk about on your radio show. Your audience are naive Americans who are easily led. I have listened to a number of your shows, and they are irresponsible, Richard. They really are. Anybody can forecast the end of the world. The reality is that it is very unlikely to happen. You blind people with science and preach that it is happening right now. No, it isn't. You should stop it. It is totally, totally irresponsible what you are doing. I suggest you take a careful look at what you are trying to achieve. It is not to inform people, that's for sure. It is to frighten them. That is not clever. It is just not right. For the record, the world's economy will stabilize, not fall off a cliff, and people like you, disaster mongers, will be seen in time to have totally overreacted and to be partly responsible for the whole mess by frightening people into overreaction. The world will recover strongly. It is just a matter of when, this year, the next, or the next. And that, dear Richard, is my view. I am sure you will not be insulted by this email. That is not my wish at all. But I think you need to understand the other side of the coin in terms of people's views. Life will go on, man's intelligence will finally shine through and sort things out. Be optimistic. Have a good day. Love, JC. Well, that really got me to thinking. You know, one hears in life that family is often responsible for saying things that other people won't say. So in its own way, I take it very seriously. If indeed it is a fact that I am needlessly frightening people, then I need to be the first to know. This has not been the reaction that I have received up until now, but it may be that there are a number, and by the way, I'm fully cognizant of the fact that my listeners are sort of the converted, that I am in fact preaching to the converted, but if any of you have anything to say on this matter, please do call in. I mean, I'd like you to call in. I'd like to know what it is that we have to say, and maybe if two or three of you call in, which you may do, we can set up a discussion about this, because I think it's important. By coincidence, I did receive my monthly copy of the Shepherd Investment Strategist this weekend, who actually talks about fear. And there is what I think is probably an apocryphal story that he mentions, which I think is relevant here. Oh, and in the meantime, before I do that, let's take George from Long Island. Hello, George.
Hello, Richard. Apology accepted, by the way. Thank you for even thinking of me. I appreciate it.
Pleasure.
The second thing is that when I became a real estate agent, I was told in school that they said that everybody, your friends and your family, will say to you, I want a real agent. No matter what you do, you're you. And they listen to the media and their friends, and they never accept what you say because they know you. And that's what's going on with you. They won't take you over the media. They want to hear Ted Brokaw on the NBC rather than listen to someone who tells them the truth.
Well, it is certainly, you know, a possibility. On the other hand, as I did also say, that sometimes you do hear things from family that you need to hear that you won't hear from anybody else. So, and that's why, in all good faith, that's why I did read that that particular email, because I wanted to know whether what I had read from my family would be something that, I need to hear from other people. George, stay there. Because we have Daryl from the Bronx. It may be that we could discuss this together. Daryl, what do you have to say?
Long time no speak to, Richard. How
Hello.
Are you?
I'm fine, thanks, Daryl.
I wouldn't take your relative's information too far in the context that your view of how markets work and is perfectly reasonable in the context of what's being... as a counterpoint to what's being pumped out over the overly optimistically gloomy places like Bloomberg and MSNBC. I mean, whereas at least if you follow your line of logic, it makes sense. If you follow them, you're going to go off a cliff. So I would suggest that what your relative may be looking at is what I'm hoping for, which is a total change in how we exchange goods and services. Now, as to how that comes about, that requires a lot of education in the public. That is currently not happening. And I'm not clear that people are very open to it. They may be in a position in which they want to be told what to do so that they don't have to take responsibility for their lives. I think that we're moving, we have the possibility to be moving out of that situation and supply really factual information that can then establish markets that would benefit human beings rather than benefit the market. And I think in this instance, the information that you provide is key and essential to balance off some of the misinformation that I hear as I listen to those other stations.
And interesting. Daryl, stay there. George, stay there. We have Elaine from Brooklyn who would like to add a comment here.
Hi there.
How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
All right, thanks. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I feel I have the option to listen to a lot of different mediums and a lot of different opinions everywhere. And what would be upsetting for me is to have someone who has some information withhold it for fear of scaring me, especially if it's factual information. And in my case, with you, Richard, I've listened to your show from the first show on PRN, and at that time you were educating us all on how to, you know, manage our finances and our IRAs and so forth. And so perhaps your cousin really didn't listen to all the shows, because I learned how to manage my IRA on your show. I learned how to, I moved my money all around. I consolidated it. I got completely out of debt. And then when you started sort of discussing the weakness in the economy, I moved my IRA completely out of the stock market, and thereby I didn't I sustained less, you know, loss. I didn't make as much of a gain, I suppose. But at the same time, my cousin lost like 80% of the value of her IRA, which I feel very sad about. So I think that the benefit of trying to express what you think is the truth, and then seeing us as intelligent people who are going to listen to various opinions. So for my part, I have to say I really appreciate everything you've done for me. So I'll just tell your cousin to give me a call.
Okay. Thank you, Elaine. We'll stay there. Maybe we could add some more. Let's hear from Mark in New York. Hello, Mark. Mark, are you there? Nope, no Mark. All right, well, we've got the three of you, hopefully. Too many people on the phone. All right, well, hopefully George, Daryl, and Elaine are there. One of the criticisms which was made in the email was that I was frightening people. Where I think Jonathan really stepped over the line, in my opinion, and that's just my opinion, is that he accused me of wanting, you know, to, as it were, frighten people, which I thought was a little bit unfair, because that's not what I was trying to do. I understand that he feels that maybe I blind people with science, as he says, and that he feels that it's irresponsible. But I wonder, you know, clearly I am frightening people, and I have a comment that I was going to make earlier on, which I will make later, about from what fear does, in fact, when it comes to investments. The same kind of fear, for example, that stops you crossing a road without looking right and left and right to make sure there's no traffic coming, I think that's a different type of fear than investing from a point of view of panic. But the accusation that I'm making people frightened, is that a fair accusation? I mean, could I maybe position my thoughts in a more sober light so that people would be more inclined to think about what they're doing, to reflect on how to act from an investment perspective rather than just going blindly in and as he says, overreacting. Daryl, Elaine, George, do you have an opinion on this? Anybody want to come in on that?
I could say something.
Go ahead.
I feel that that it's very interesting the way you present things, and very passionate, and so that works for me in terms, because this information would definitely not interest me as someone who's just like not familiar with this kind of information. So I would just say that I like the way you present it, and another thing is that I step up my tone sometimes in the face of so much other information that's opposing me. So I actually sort of needed to hear that tone. And if the information is a little bit frightening, well, I would want to know if there is a wolf at the door, kind of like, you know. I don't know. That's my personal...
Yeah, well, of course, you know, Jonathan's answer to that is that, you know, I'm preaching to a naive American public. In other words, I don't think he means that in a malicious way, but I do think that he feels that maybe the level of consciousness is not appropriate for the kind of things I say, and maybe I'm taking advantage of that by, as he says, blinding people with science.
Well, look at my bottom line then.
Yeah,
I may be naive, but I'm learning very quickly, and I've managed to save myself from a big problem.
Yeah, yeah. All right then, Elaine. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Would anybody else like to comment on that? Who's on right now?
Yes, Richard. It's George.
Yes, George.
I like to quote Abraham Lincoln when he says, "You have to speak the truth as God gives us the knowledge to know what truth is." People hear what's on television, and they want to believe it. If you talk to a Republican or a Democrat and you tell them that the party is violating the Constitution, they don't want to hear that. They want to hear the party line. Hmm. The fact that it violates the Constitution means nothing to them because they are a party member and that you want to toe the party line. When you tell them the truth, they fight you because they don't want to believe the truth. They want to believe the lie. So that's where you're sitting. But you can't stop what you're doing because you're doing the right thing. You're telling truth to people.
Well, as long as, quite frankly, as long as my listeners want me to talk, I won't stop what I'm doing. But I nevertheless always want to touch base because I want to appeal to the largest cross section of the community that I can, which is why a few weeks ago I asked whether I was giving enough factual information in the form of statistics or not enough or whether you would like more. And the general consensus seemed to be that if I could maybe work on a few more statistics, that would be fine. And so I have tried to do that in recent shows. So, as I say, receiving something like this or anything else, I take it seriously, and I would want to run it by you, the listeners. So.
We wouldn't have the education we have if it wasn't for you and Gary and people like you who would tell the truth and tell us where to look and what to look for and what's going on around us. And that is so valuable. You cannot really believe how valuable it is to the general public.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, George, for your input. Anybody else? Anything else that comes from this? Or shall we move on?
Well, Daryl in the Bronx here, Richard.
Yes.
Add to what both George and Elaine were saying, and perhaps from a different perspective. The American population is not very educated. Well, it's not educated at all, as far as I can see, in any economic factors. So for someone to think that because their stock is evaluated at one point in time at one amount, or their house was valued at something at one point in time, that they're therefore in an economic situation in which they can relax, demonstrates to me that they don't understand what they're participating in. A market is a market, and it fluctuates, and it moves, and there are cycles. This is something that you have brought to our attention, and unless people begin to understand that what they see on paper is not necessarily what is actually happening at this moment, you add a key essential piece to the economic information that's available that is not easily accessible to most people. So because I believe you believe in what you believe, it's important that more people hear what you have to say so that they can then balance it off against other pieces of information and get a better rounding as to what is it you're participating in when you produce wealth in whatever fashion you choose to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. I mean, I definitely think that people should make up their own minds. I mean, I'm not setting myself up as some kind of guru here. I offer my opinions and my information to be set alongside other people's, and then each person needs to make their own decisions. And Jonathan, if you're listening, I hope you do understand that, because obviously, there are people who set themselves up as demigods and believe that everything they say is is directly, you know, from the Almighty himself, and I certainly don't feel that way. I'm basically a receptacle of all kinds of different ideas and pieces of information, and I sort the wheat from the chaff, and I give out what I think is logical information. It always comes down to, you know, what logic is all about. We have two further callers that have joined us. One is Gina from New York. Hi, Gina. Gina, are you there? All right, let's try Sally from California. Is Sally available?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, this is Mark from New York.
Mark from New York. Okay, Mark, let's hear you.
Well, I also try to share out some of the information I get from you around the office, and some people don't want to hear it right away. But when things happen and it just follows the same way that you were predicting, suddenly they want to hear about it. Like one person had to lose $75,000 to finally take their stuff out of the stock market, their 401k. So you just let whatever happens, happens, and then they can change later on.
Well, that's generally how it works, I guess, how anybody, you know, develops a reputation. I think that, though, Mark, what my cousin is trying to say, I don't think that he is denying that things are as I say they are. I think what he is saying, and I'd love it if Jonathan himself were actually able to come on the show, but I guess you can't dial 888 numbers from the UK. I think what he's saying is that it's the future that he is concerned with, the fact that I might be overreacting, that basically what if things turn around? What if suddenly everything gets better? And I'm just left predicting doom and gloom and bringing down the whole sort of group of listeners with me, all positioned the wrong way for an eventual recovery, which he believes is in the offing, and I believe is not. And that's where I think we differ. He's optimistic, as he says. I'm not going to say pessimistic. I don't talk in those terms because I just like to think of myself as realistic. In fact, I can be even more cynical than that. I can say that, look, if people are positioned as I would want them to be, then I am optimistic that they will make money even during the downturn. So these words are very tendentious for my taste. Anyway, we have Adrian from New York, who I believe is with us. Do we have Adrian? Adrian from New York. Hello, Adrian.
Hi, how are you today?
Okay, thanks.
I must say, I came across your program as a result of following Gary Null and his new network, and I've really been excited about what you're saying, partially because it expands on some of the things that I have been thinking privately. What I'm wondering is, you know, for people in this situation that see what is coming and see things and can agree with you, what advice can you give us for looking for ways to position ourselves to be able to have steady income, to not morbidly take advantage, but to position ourselves to optimize our income potential in this type of market?
It's very difficult, Adrian. You see, interest rates are so low now that you simply cannot just go out and buy a bond or some form of interest-bearing security and expect to be able to sort of just live on it. You can't do that. You used to be able to do that, but you can't do that anymore. And people are telling me now that they're in dire straits because these are people who have made a lot of money that, if they're clever, they've even managed to maintain that equity, their portfolios. But they can't find any investment which is safe, which gives them an income, and that's going to send a lot of people into deep trouble because they're going to be offered investments with high yield, which turn out to be very dangerous, which is why they are offering a high yield in an environment of low yield expectations. So you have to be even more cautious and mindful of what you're doing.
Can I ask you also, because unfortunately I did not find your program in time to really save my personal situation. But what I'm looking at is my company is in the midst of downsizing, and my job will more than likely be gone by the end of the year. and I'm trying to look at business opportunities that I might be able to pursue. And again, what is there any general advice you can give to the general audience that might be willing to strike out on their own, but are not really in a situation to have a lot of capital to invest in a new venture, but are looking for ways that they can try to secure some kind of financial security through entrepreneurship?
Both have come in.
That has come up frequently, Adrian, and this question of what kind of business opportunities are available. The best way to look at this, from my perspective, is take yourself off into a quiet space, sit down, close your eyes, and ask yourself the following question. What areas of the economy are indispensable to a rip-roaring depression? And when I say indispensable, I really mean areas without which the economy simply cannot operate at any level. Okay, now, when you've come up with the answer to that question, you will probably find that they pertain to areas of health, of food and food distribution, of law and order, a few other areas which are perfectly safe. And again, within those areas, you need to define what is really indispensable and what can be done without. For example, in food distribution, I doubt that caviar fits the bill. But certainly if you can find areas that you know are going to be in demand in an environment of extreme economic deprivation, Adrian, you are a long way to finding the answer to your question. But you have to focus in that kind of a way, I believe, in order to really assure yourself of a livelihood in the future. And that, of course, presupposes that you have the capital with which to set this up. You know, so many people may have good ideas but simply don't have the wherewithal. And, of course, as you know, banks aren't lending these days, so it's difficult to get loans and other forms of, financial startups in order to do this. Mm. But that's what I would do, Adrian. Sally, I believe, is still with us from California. Are you there, Sally?
Can you hear me?
Yes, Sally, I can. Go ahead.
Oh, good. Well, I'd like to thank you for sharing your knowledge and your wisdom with all of us, Richard, and I'm so grateful to you. And I hope your cousin is listening, because I would like to let him know that it was because of your prediction, I guess as he would put it, gloom and doom of the future that concerned the Lehman Brothers, that my family has a home, and that we came probably hours within losing a very, very, very large sum of money. And so this gullible American naive person loves your show, and we have you to thank for everything that we have at this time. As I said, like I said, it was in the nick of time, and you were the that we're eating as well as we are. So, you know, your dear beloved cousin, he I don't think really understands how important you are on the planet and all the love that you put out into this planet's soul. And I appreciate you, and I love you dearly, Richard.
Well, thank you, Sally. I appreciate that. And it's easy to develop a kind of swollen head when I hear things like that. But nobody is more mindful than I am of what happens when things change. I have always been fascinated by the trend changes of markets, and I've done lots of studies about those. I think it was July the 15th of 1932 when the stock market, for example, hit its absolute and ultimate low point of 40 in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And if I'm right, and it was the 15th of July, it's quite sobering to think that on the 14th of July, the market was going down, was actually going down. It had lost almost 87% of its value, and that doesn't include companies which had gone out of business, thereby taking them out of the Dow Jones Industrial Average Index, which means that actually the market was down much more than 87%. But let's assume it went down by 87%. On the 5th, on the 14th, the market was headed down. On the 16th, the market was headed up, never to see those levels again. It had changed. Who rang the bell on the 15th? Who told everybody that now is the time to invest for the next 80 years? Who told them this? How were they ever going to find out? So imagine Richard Martin talking on the radio on the 14th of July and being everybody's hero. And at the 16th, he's still everybody's hero because not one single person appreciates that things have changed.
Mm-hmm.
But a year later, he's become everybody's nemesis, hasn't he? He's become, you know, the whipping boy. I mean, one has to be aware that at one point there is a bottom. And I think that that's Jonathan's claim, is that I do not know, I will not know, and I cannot know where the bottom is and where the turns come. And to Jonathan, I would say, I am intensely aware of this, and I will make every effort to turn when the turns come, and if possible, before they come. And I hope to be at a point where I'm able to say to people on this show, you know, the time has come to invest, to assume that things are getting better. That even if everybody, by which time, by the way, everybody will be bearish, including, I venture to say, my cousin himself, will say how right I was and encourage me in my view that things are getting worse, and I will be obliged to say, no, the time has come to turn. This is the time when everybody is fully bearish, that everybody thinks it's the end of the world. Now is the time to invest. Now is the time to look forward to better times ahead. Had I said that on the 15th of July, 1932, nobody would have believed me. Nobody. And it would have taken several years before they did believe me. Maybe people on Richard Martin's wake-up call might have believed me. I can't say they would. I can't say they wouldn't. But what I can say with certainty is that it wasn't for many years before people became optimistic once more about the future of their country. And so, you know, I must be aware of that, and I am. And it's something that I've never said on this show, but it is something that is always in the back of my mind. That I cannot look at the future of the economy to make predictions about the future. I have to look at past precedent, at how these changes are made. Markets are very helpful because the internal markets tend to preempt economic changes by about 9 months. So I can look and do look at that and depend largely on what I see in terms of the market technicals. But in the meantime, I've got to call them as I see them. And, you know, if I want to frighten you, yes, I want you to know that things are getting worse. I want you to make decisions based on the fear that if you don't, you will suffer. And I don't deny it. And I don't, there's no two ways about that.
Exactly what happened with my husband and I felt the fear, and thank God he listened to me. You know, the truth and facts are very frightening.
Hello?
Yes.
Sally, I think we've lost you. I'm sorry.
Just saying that the truth and facts are very frightening.
Oh, I think they are, yes, and they can be. But the corollary is also true. It's strange, but when things are going well, then euphoria is also very frightening because euphoria makes you make decisions that you shouldn't make. You see, it works on both ends of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. Euphoria makes you complacent and self-congratulatory. You know, you've made a lot of money in the markets. Your IRAs are up. The value of your house has soared. You think that you're invincible. And that's the moment when somebody like me comes along and says, okay, everybody out of the water. It's time to sell. It's time to look at bad times ahead. And people look at you and say, you're completely crazy. And from my perspective, it's only when I get that reaction that I know I'm right. If people agree with me, the chances are the euphoria hasn't reached its zenith. And the same is true on the other side of the scale. I mean, if I said, the time to come to get back into stocks, to buy houses has arrived, Jonathan would agree with me, and he'd be happy to hear that. And the sad part about all this is that it's only when Jonathan agrees with me that I will kind of feel that it is, in fact, probably, or rather when he doesn't agree with me, when he thinks that things are going to get worse, that's probably the time when I will look at and see, you know, red flags about my position flying everywhere, and red lights and everything, and that will be the time to buy again. But, you know, this is not specific to any one person. This is a very general concept, which is all part of the business of making money anyway, is being a contrarian. When I'm fortunate to be a contrarian, I've never wanted to go along with people's views and opinions. It's not always done me well in my life. It's given me hardship, but at the same time, it has its own upside too. Sally, thank you very much for your call. Thank you, everybody else. Is there anybody else who would like to contribute anything else to the discussion here, who's still online? I've actually no idea who is still online and who isn't, or who'd like to say another word. Nobody? That's fine.
I just wanted to say that I think that you're a very dignified individual and you're very professional, and I just love your show. And Jonathan, God bless you, sweetheart. But you better listen to your cousin.
I'll pass the message on, Sally. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Here's an interesting, as I told you at the beginning of the show, quite by coincidence, I read this month's Shepherd Investment Strategist, and he comes up with this story, which I think is interesting, and this pertains to fear and how useful or valuable fear is in the decision-making progress. And the story is as follows. It seems that a farmer and his son got caught in a violent thunderstorm quite a distance from their home. As they were running across the field towards home, with lightning flashing all around them, the farmer suddenly realized his son was no longer right beside him. Turning around, he saw his son down on his knees with his head bowed, obviously in prayer. He yelled back through the thunder and driving rain to him, "Son, what are you doing?" His son replied, "Praying," to which the father shouted, "A scared prayer ain't worth a darn, son. Run!" Well, I have a few more observations to make about that. But in the meantime, Sharita from New York has come on the line. Sharita, hi.
Hi. I'm another person that is most grateful to you. And I hope that your relative is listening to me, too, to say thank you for your warning. Exactly a year ago, I heard you on February 11th when you were saying in so many words, please, please sell if you have real estate in Manhattan and do yourself a favor. And for some reason, your words just got to me that that's exactly what I needed to do. And I am so very grateful to you because, yes, the prices here are beginning to fall. It's the last place, it seems, where everybody thought that Manhattan would never go down, but it is. And as my realtor recently said to me, I was the last wagon of the last train that left town. So from the bottom of my heart, I thank you for your warning, and I listen to you. You're a very, very wise person, so thank you again.
Well, thank you, Sarita. It's actually Sarita. I'm sorry, the spelling came down as Sharita with a C-H, so I didn't recognize you. But, of course, I know who you are, Sarita,
yes,
and thank you so much for your input.
Nice to hear
from you.
Oh, it's our pleasure, all your listeners. I hope that you get that notion out of your head that you're doing us harm. You're doing us all good, and the whole world is so much better for having someone like you in it. So thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you. And so going back to my original concept here about what fear has done, you know, there is a difference, as I said earlier, between the fear of crossing the road and the fear of not taking action which needs to be taken. And Jonathan brings up a good point. I mean, you know, this question of frightening people, it is interesting to see what fear really does in a destructive context. I mean, for example, if you look at what the government has done, in terms of fear, and you see that this TARP thing came out, you only had to watch Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson as he presented the TARP plan. I mean, look at his lips. They were quivering with fear. You know, we were essentially told that if the plan didn't get put through immediately, the entire financial world would collapse. And yet, interestingly enough, when he did get the money, it took him a full 10 days to deploy it, despite the fact that he was talking about hours in advance of the collapse. So this was the mainstream trying to frighten the members of Congress into voting for this ridiculous TARP plan, you know. The Fed chief, Ben Bernanke, spoke haltingly and obviously with much trepidation when he was questioned by lawmakers about the efficacy of his proposed and implemented solutions, you know. And Tim Geithner, the same thing. None of these people are confident about what they're doing. Obviously, it seems to me a fear-based, fear-motivated plan is wrong and harmful. And you'll know that from your own lives. You know, when you make decisions out of fear, they're almost always wrong. You know, in subsequent events relating to this TARP, and much of the intervention and capital injections that have taken place over the last number of months have proven to be ineffectual, if not plain damaging. You know, fear is not a good basis upon which to take action. Do understand that. If there is any doubt about what I'm trying to do in terms of frightening you, it is not attempting to get you to do something off the cuff without consideration. You know, obviously, as I say, there are two different types of fear. The fear, for example, of being motivated to jump out of the way when a car is bearing down on you is different from the government's fear of not doing something, no matter how ill-conceived the actions may be. You know, the proper plan has to be created for any activity that you may want to take in life. You know, whether it's investing or planning out your life. You know, again, as I touched on, the idea of missing out on the very last penny of profit is a fear that investors have, which tend to make them lose money overall because the fear is inextricably ground up with greed. And the fear of hysterically selling everything right at the bottom of a market, which is what investors so often tend to do because they're certain the prices will continue on down forever. You know, so be very, very careful of that. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been a very fascinating hour. I really appreciate you all calling in. I have enjoyed immensely discussing this with you. Of course, I have enormous amounts of stuff to talk about, which will happen next Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time in the usual way. So all of you, listeners, callers, thank you very much for your time. I look forward to talking to you on Thursday. This is Richard Martin from Richard Martin's Wake Up Call saying bye-bye till then.